AM 560, The Answer. Prepare to have your mind open. The lies of the mainstream media are about to be exposed, and the hypocrisy of the left is about to be revealed. You've tuned into Black and Right. This is a revolution in how you think about politics, race, and culture. And leading that revolution are your hosts, Charles Love and John Anthony.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Black and Right with John Anthony and Charles Love.
Hey, hey, hey.
So we got, I'm really excited about the show today. They're all good, but this has got me, kind of hyped up because we got lucky here. John and I have been planning this show for a few weeks, so it's just that the stars aligned. It had nothing to do with the recent news. But, you know, Monday was Mexican Independence Day. I'm going to reference that shortly. And then recently on the all over Facebook, Facebook and all social media has been a buzz with the Revolt Summit with Candace Owens, T.I., and Killer Mike, especially. John, did you see that?
I did see that, and I think it's going to cause for some interesting conversations today.
Right.
I mean, some very interesting conversations.
John, he hasn't let the cat out of the bag, but he knows what the show is about, so he knows how we're going to tie this stuff together, so it's interesting. But quickly, I want to talk about them, because Candace Owens was a conservative amongst a large number of supposed independents and leftists, and she kind of got her voice squashed there, and I wish there were some things she had an opportunity to say, but I'm going to end with T.I. and start with Killer Mike, because
okay.
A lot of conservatives were all excited, like, yeah, Killer Mike was, you know, he was doing this, and he sounded, you know. Right, but see, here's the thing. You know, I'm always talking about pro-blacks. I like them, and I agree with them on some things. It's not like I agree with them on everything, but I think they're closer to, and at least open enough to hear what we're saying. But people were, like, lauding him like he was great. And I'm like, he couldn't close the circle. And I had three big problems with Killer Mike. One, the one that most people don't talk about is, I know he's a rapper, but there was so much profanity and nigger. It was almost like he was doing it like, I can't get blacks to understand what I'm saying unless I use profanity and say that. So it was almost condescending in one sense. The second thing he was making point, he made a big point, the one that blew up all over was listening to Democrats and Republicans alike, listening to people fight over who has the better master. But that just means he has no idea what conservatism is about, right?
Right.
Wanting freedom has nothing to do with having a master.
But it's that control.
Right. And then lastly, I mean, come on, he's a Bernie Sanders supporter. So he keeps saying, I care about who has something for black people. But if Bernie and socialism is about everybody being equal, so you can't get something for black people and be a communist or a socialist.
One of the things that pissed me off is that aspect of control that he tried to do with the whole coming after Candace, even with T.I.
Well, he wasn't the one coming after.
T.I. was the one that really came after.
Right.
But, you know, you always hear about this black agenda. If you don't follow the black agenda, you know, that's the overall goal of that whole Revolt Summit was following the black agenda. You know, I wrote something down because I wanted to make sure I said it right. I wrote this when I woke up this morning because I knew we were going to hit on this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I may piss some people off with this and endear others. I don't follow the black agenda. I follow the Jesus and Him crucified agenda. I know my role. I know I have no problem with others following whatever agenda they deem fit. Jesus and crucified is all I know. I followed agendas before. Whenever I follow His agenda, my life is the better for it. I believe in this principle right here. One plant, one waters, but let God give the increase. That's for me. That might not be for other people, but that's how I look at. That's the agenda. That's why people say, well, why you support Trump? That's why.
Well, see, that's important, but let's take it at face value. I'm assuming the whole point of the summit was about, helping the black community. Okay, that's fine. Where Candace either failed or didn't get an opportunity to respond, because now we're going to bring it back to T.I. and bring it back to the topic of the show. T.I. attacked her about, you know, supposedly, you know, endorsing slavery or whatever, and then Trump, being a Trump supporter, you know, I mean, you probably run into this a lot too. The whole his slogan being "Make America Great Again." When was America great? So I thought about that, thinking, what Candace should have said if I could have gone into her body at the time. Because we talk about American greatness, and I'm going to give some of my thoughts on it, and then we're going to rap about it a bit. You know, when I talk about John and I's plan for the show today, we were talking about American greatness, right? Yeah. And talking about America being great and people not understanding that slogan. So I will answer T.I.'s question as to when I believe America was great. But I wrote a couple of articles, and I want to take a couple quotes from it and see what people think about it. Because T.I. was challenging, like I said, Candace, about American being great, implying that American's not great. So in one of the articles I wrote, I said, it has become hip to bash America, a country founded on the greatest idea in history. The mistake many make in their critiques is focusing on the times we have come up short of that idea. There's no doubt that this has happened, and there should always be attempts to improve. However, no matter how numerous those occurrences have been, it doesn't change the important distinctions of liberty and individualism that separate us from the rest of the world. This means that when we fall short, we don't become worse than other countries. We move closer to being like other countries.
Uh-oh.
Slavery is the most common example that they use, but it's a bad example and they're wrong. You see, slavery is an example of America not living up to the principles, but it has nothing to do with the principles themselves. See, my point there is either, you know, you take the Declaration of Independence when Jefferson writes, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. So he's laying out a foundation about a potential of a country that no one else has talked about doing this before, right? So that's right. What made it new. So now when you could say, those who say he owns slaves and all these other things, the question is only, is it true? Is that statement true? So, A, do those rights come from a creator and not from man? And, B, do they apply to everyone? If you agree with those two things, then it doesn't matter that they did a bad job of acting it out for a while. So my answer to when was America great, it's been different levels of greatness, but it's been great since the beginning. It got greater when hundreds of thousands of Americans died to end slavery. It got even greater at the end of slavery when we had all the freedoms. We didn't have government encroaching on everything before Woodrow Wilson and his type screwed everything up. And then it ebbed and flowed. Obviously, Jim Crow made it less great, but it didn't make it not great. It's not about perfection. It's about what you do well and the premise and the ideal of the country itself. So that's why. So what we're going to do today, which is interesting, is that we're going to talk about American greatness, like I said. But what we're going to do is a twist that I'm excited about is we're going to do it. We talk about immigration. We talk about greatness. We talk about Black America. That was what that summit was about. We're going to talk about America's greatness and what makes it unique and special, but through the eyes of immigrants. People have been coming to these shores for years, right? So why don't we talk to some of those people and see what they have to say, both about the countries that they left that they might not like or might love, or the country and the country that they came to. And the people that we'll be talking to, we'll have people call in and talk about their experiences. And we have a couple of guests that will point out some things there, too. So I think it would be great to hear what an immigrant has to say about either why they came, what they've experienced since being here, and what their thoughts of America are.
Did you listen to the entire video?
I did not.
Because I'm curious.
It was like an hour and a half, right?
Well, I'm curious if T.I. ever said that he believe that America's great.
We already know he does.
I mean, he has how many millions in that bank account? Yeah. So America's gotten great for him, correct?
Right.
So, I mean, I get what they were trying to say. And Candace is brave for going in there all by her lonesome,
right,
without any backup, without anybody coming to her defense. I mean, Killer Mike,
yeah,
he did come to her the defense, I mean, to be fair to him.
Right, that's true.
He did come to her defense and basically laid out what he felt like, you know, hey, this is what you should have said. And then, but I thought it was rude of him when she was getting ready to say something. He's like, no, you be quiet now. You had your opportunity. Did you hear him say that?
But she didn't have her opportunity.
T.I. never gave her the opportunity.
I think what she should have done was just say, you know, we can all critique her, but I know she knew she was going into it. It's a difficult thing. People booing and all that. They're not treating the other people. They don't agree with everything Killer Mike or T.I. says, but they're not booing them. I would have just said, look, at least let me say one thing, and then you can say whatever you want to say after that. And then I would have made the most poignant mark, a point I can make, and then let them go.
Yeah, but
they're going to disagree with you anyway.
But I think when she realized that she wasn't able to get her point across, you know, I believe in this other thing, you know, don't cast your pearls before swine. You know, because they're going to trample on them and destroy them. So I think that's what she was trying to do when she realized that they weren't just going to listen to anything she had to say. They were just there to shout her down, specifically somebody like T.I. I bet she's been chopping at the bit to get to her, to have a one-on-one. in a public setting to basically shut her down, to shut her up because of her belief systems.
Right. But I think that, like I said, my argument has always been the problem with the people, the white left, and, you know, a lot of the pro-blacks, like I told you, I keep saying over and over again, I'm aligned with them on many things, but some of them, the ones that don't get it, the problem with them is America's not perfect, but they keep hearing, when you say great, they hear perfect.
Correct.
So what they do is they take America's flaws, because they live amongst it, they feel it every day, and compare it to the good things they hear about countries they've never been. That's why this episode is going to be so powerful, because we're going to talk to people who can give them firsthand experience of what happens in other countries. So, you know, we're going to talk about that. Give us a call at 312-642-5600 and tell us what you agree about, your feelings on American greatness, whether I'm right or wrong, what you feel about what we said, and some of our guests. We're going to start off next, coming up, with a Jew who lived through the Soviet Union. That's going to be a very interesting experience. You're listening to Black and Right with John Anthony and Charles on AM 560 The Answer.
This is Black and Right on AM 560 with Charles Love and John Anthony.
Welcome back to Black and Right on AM 560 The Answer. That song you heard there is by the artist we have here on hold, Rainz, R-A-I-N-Z. We're talking about America's greatness through the eyes and ears of immigrants, and we have on the line Rainz, who is a American citizen who was born and raised behind the steel curtain. I'd love to hear his thoughts and what he has to say about his experience. Welcome to the show, Rainz.
Hello, Charles. What a pleasure to be on your show. And John, hi.
How you doing?
Pleasure meeting you, too.
It's good to have you. Hey, I'm assuming you were listening and you heard a bit of the first segment.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. So what do you think about that? I don't know if you saw the video we were referencing, but I would love to hear your thoughts on, you know, let's take it really slow. So how old were you when you came here?
I was 17.
Okay.
Just graduated from high school, pretty much, and that's when my family was allowed to leave the country.
Right. So was there a period of time before then when they were trying to leave? How long did it take them from the time they wanted to leave to get here?
They went through a very long process of being approved by the United States, approximately 3 years or so, if not more, from the time they filed the application. And then by the time we had an interview at the American Embassy in Moscow. So the whole process together, before we were allowed actually to buy tickets, took approximately 3 years or so.
Okay, and walk us through a little bit of what I want to learn today. We're going to hear from people from several different countries, all with interesting backgrounds, is a little bit about what you experienced, since we don't know it firsthand. We only see and hear in books, but what it was like to be, I guess when you came here, it was after the fall, but when you were a child, it was still the Soviet Union. So, you know, from 6 to high school, what give us some a little bit of what that was like.
Yes. So I'm an immigrant from hell. You know, Soviet Union
wow.
was.
Did you say hell?
Yes. And those who say otherwise, they're lying. Okay. There are some Russians that I know or I hear of somewhere on TV or something, saying that, oh, it used to be so nice, now it's horrible. Well, they still have it horrible. Forget about what they have now. I mean, from talking about one field a year into another field a year.
But I want these people to feel it. Give us one or two specifics of something that you saw, felt, smelled. What you weren't allowed
first
to
of all,
do.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, first of all, you know, just to give you a simple example, you know, I'm Jewish and you represent me correctly. So when I was a kid, third grade, my school teacher in front of the whole class actually announced that all Jews are traitors because, you know, they want to leave Soviet Union let's say, go to Israel, for example. Some of the Jewish community folks wanted to leave Soviet Union back then. And everybody in class, and then she, what she said is like, and by the way, why don't you get up and announce your ethnicity, not the nationality as a Soviet Union citizen. So I had to get up and say that I'm Russian. She said, no, you're not Russian. Keep standing until you tell me the truth, who you are. And the next thing I know, the whole class, I mean, we were like 8 years
like,
old.
Like 8 or 9. This is amazing.
Exactly, yeah. So this is, we're talking about the level of anti-Semitism. And I'm addressing Jewish community who are, you know, a few generations who live here, you don't understand how great we have it here.
Right. Wow.
Soviet Union was extremely anti-Semitic country.
I had this right over. One of my questions you answered at first was going to ask you, are Jews even considered Russian? Because I know that that's an interesting thing from an situation that we have different from here. But let me also ask, so you already answered that, but let me ask you, and then we'll go to John. But I want to know, you talk about the schools. What did the schools teach you all about America?
Okay, we had two things going on. At least through the time when I was basically growing up, and we already started watching a little bit of American movies, and it was not legal. Okay, we would just watch it here and there. You know, somebody would.
I'm sorry. Could you say that again? Just say it slow. Say you're watching American movies, and say the piece after that. It was not what again?
It was not legal.
Oh, okay.
It was not legal. No. Like Rambo would not be allowed to be played in movie theaters for example. I mean, nothing American was allowed. So we had two things going on. We, like for example, me and others, we adored and loved the United States. We knew that the United States is something amazing. At the same time, what we were getting in schools and by Communist Party, from which, by the way, they didn't accept me for my speeches like that. what happened was they were propagating the idea that America is the evil on the planet, and we need to protect ourselves and everybody in the entire socialist camp around the Soviet Union, that we need to stand strong against them. They were celebrating every communist that we know of today who went to Soviet Union pretending that, hey, they have it really nice out there. And you know who I'm referring to right now.
Yeah.
One of them is running for president.
Uh-oh.
This despicable man. And then anybody who follows this guy, forget about Democrat or Republican. This guy is evil.
Who are you talking about?
Sanders.
Yes.
Bernie Sanders.
Yes.
So people like that were useful idiots in the Soviet Union. They would be praised and shown on TVs to us that, look, they recognize that we are the actual idea that works, which is Soviet Union. And look, the failed United States, they all come here, the politicians and musicians, especially musicians. It's a very upsetting situation in the art community here. You know,
Rain, sorry to cut you off.
Yeah.
But I want to talk more about, you look at what's happening with immigration, illegal immigration in America. Is there anything that you're seeing today about, give me your thoughts and feelings about how you, about where you're seeing the American immigration system go? Are you seeing anything back from the home country that you're starting to see invade America, socialism, communism? Do you think that has anything to do with the rise of socialism in the United States?
I don't think that's what brings immigrants in the United States to begin with. They actually, all of them, 100%, come from left-wing, leftist countries that are run by leftist governments. There is not a single Australian we know that crossed the border illegally and is asking for a visa, right? Or, you know, status. We don't know any of this.
Right.
I came from the left-wing idea that failed. Look at South America and everybody else. The only problem I have with immigration, some immigrants who praise their countries while they stay here and they live here.
Yeah.
This is absolutely unacceptable. What I remember, what we went through, we had an interview here in the United States before we were approved for citizenship, whether we had alliance to the Soviet Union still, whether we traveled there, because a lot of immigrants who pretend to run away from their countries, they keep going back there, having vacations, all of this. It's absolutely unacceptable to me. So if you leave your country and you ask him for refugee status, for example, illegal immigrants included, they run away, supposedly, right? They they literally get up and they want to save their lives. Yeah. And they come here and they put up those, you know, they celebrate their holidays from the old countries, from, you know, previous countries. I'm appalled. It's like me still running around with a Soviet flag on the streets.
Right.
It's October 25th.
Do you support Trump's immigration policy, the building of the wall? Are there any aspects of his policy that you don't agree with?
I agree with his policies on immigration. Yes, I certainly not a big fan of his foreign policy. I mean, he could have been a little bit stronger than isolationism is really. Here's what broke the camel's back, the Soviet Union, because we were not isolationists. Reagan was involved with Soviet Union. He actually, you know, went head on to deal with this monster. It was a monster. Right. I mean, Reagan gave, because of Reagan, he gave half of the planet freedom to some degree. Russia is still lacking, unfortunately.
Reg, we have a few seconds here. Do you want to tell the people how they can find your music?
Yes. Well, please, if you can, if you don't mind, to write it down, because you can find me on Facebook.
R-A-I-N-Z, right? Reigns on Facebook. It's been a pleasure. It's been enlightening.
You can literally, you can type in Reigns, Shadow Train, for example, the name of the song. You just play it, and I truly appreciate it.
Thank you for coming on. You're listening to Black and Right on AM 560, The Answer.
Black and Right continues on AM 560. Once again, here are your hosts, John Anthony and Charles Love.
Welcome back to Black and Right, John and Charles. I forgot to mention at the top of the show that thanks to George, we are live streaming, so you can check us out at AM 560, The Answer. Black and Right, I see us up. Well, there's a light in my face, but John can see us on the screen.
I can see. Well, sort of. I mean, I'm blacked out on my side,
well,
though.
Blacked out, first time ever. So we've been talking about American greatness and from the eyes of an immigrant, and we have a caller on the line, Yvonne. Yvonne, welcome to Black and Right. Are you up?
She hung up.
Can you hear me? No, it says she's there. I'm tapping her. Are you tapping her?
That's old Joliet phones.
I think she's up now.
Hey,
how are you?
Hey, I finally made it. I'm so excited.
Hey, Yvonne.
You didn't tell us where you were from, and it's so funny. You called, like, I answered the phone. You're like, it's me, Yvonne.
Yeah, it's like, oh, my gosh, you forgot me already? I can't believe it.
No, it just wasn't me on the phone. What you got? What are you thinking so far?
Wait, you do know who this is, right?
I do. You're eating up the time. What are you thinking? Tell me what
you're
thinking.
Okay, well,
you
know what? As soon as I heard the topic, I thought, oh, my gosh, this is my call. This is definitely my call.
So tell everybody where you're from, where you were born.
I was born in Guatemala, or like my husband teases me because I say Guatemala because people say Guatemala, but actually it's Guatemala.
Guatemala.
Yes.
Yeah. So tell us what you were thinking when we were setting it up and when you harkened back to where you grew up.
A lot of what the other guy said, I totally agree with. You know, when my father was a politician, actually, he was raised here himself from the age of 10, was visiting Guatemala when he met my mom. Long story short, he got involved in politics. It almost cost him his life. And that's how we ended up here. I was 7 years old when I was brought here. And from the moment that I set foot on this land, my dad told us, and I was the oldest of five, he told us, you are now Americans, you know, which meant, in every sense of the word, we left our birth country behind and we became Americans, and with every sense of the word. And at its very worst, I want to get this out, you know, that I think America, at its very worst, is the best country in the world.
You could not end the call any greater than that. Thank you for the call. You know, we're going on to another country that's been in the news a lot, Korea. And I want to go to my friend Julie to talk about her experience. Julie, welcome to Black and Right.
Hi.
Hi, Julie.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome to have you. So, have you been listening? You've been busy. You weren't really listening. That's fine. I can talk specifically about you.
Charles.
So Korea. So you were brought here when you. I mean, you came when you were a teenager, right? Kind of like Rains.
I was 16.
16. So yours is a little different because, you know, people come here for many different reasons. You weren't fleeing. So when you came, you didn't really want to come here, right? Tell us about that.
Right. I didn't want to really come here. So I didn't know about this, but apparently my family had applied for a visa for green card in 1980. And then we were issued the green card. The visa was issued in 1987. So my mom, like my dad had passed away in 1978 from cancer. So I was 7 years old when he passed away. So then, you know, my mom tells me and my brothers that we're going to America, and I said, "We're not. I'm not going to America because I like it here. Right. All my friends are here. I'm perfectly happy here. I am not going to America."
And I think that's a good thing because most of the people, they expected me as a conservative to try to bring a bunch of people on who hated their country so they can say good things about America. But you were brought almost kicking and screaming. You were a teenager. You had friends. You didn't want to come. But what are your views of America now being here for years?
So I think, you know, and I felt this as soon as we, you know, we landed, just the freedom that we have in this country that I feel most people who have never lived outside of the United States take it for granted. Just to give you an example, right, we talk about racial discrimination a lot in this country. Now, you take Korea, it's one of the most homogeneous country in terms of ethnic background of the people, right? It's one blood. So everybody looks the same. Everybody comes from the same line of blood. So there is, you wouldn't think that there would be much of racial discrimination. So because there's not too many different people racially, ethnically, there's different kinds of, I mean, it's a lot more, there's a lot more discrimination in a homogeneous society. So I told you earlier that my father passed away from cancer when I was 7 years old, and I couldn't tell my friends, I couldn't tell my neighbors. So my neighbors didn't know that my father had passed away. My mom couldn't tell people that she was a widow. because we would be ostracized, because we would look, we don't fit in the typical family with father and mother. So I would be ostracized, my brother would be ostracized, and, you know, our family would be ostracized from the neighborhood in school. So none of my friends knew, even my best friend.
Wow, that is totally,
didn't,
I mean,
know. Yeah.
That is something that none of us would even be able to think about. John had an interesting question for you.
We're gonna hold it. Okay, so, you know, you and I are both involved in politics. Politics is in almost everything, especially when it comes to immigration. But what were your thoughts, or your parents' thoughts, your family thoughts, and how did you guys feel about when Trump started talks with North Korea?
What do you mean by...
When Trump started the talks with North Korea, as someone that's from the South...
Okay. So
what were your thoughts?
When
what were your feelings?
Yeah. Talks with North Korea?
Yes.
So I think a lot of the very concerned Korean immigrants on North Korea shares my opinion that he did a good job of de-escalating the crisis. The guy in North Korea, he's not someone who can be tamed. He's not someone who could be reasoned, not someone who could be talked with logic. But my opinion was that I didn't really have a very high hope.
Well,
and most Koreans did not have very high hopes. Like, okay, so, yeah, you know,
Julie,
they're going to have a talk, but so what?
I hear the music. We are up against the break here. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it. We'll be back with more on Black and Right with John and Charles on AM 560 The Answer.
And now, more of Black and Right on AM 560. Here are your hosts, John Anthony and Charles Love.
Welcome back to Black and Right with John and Charles, talking about America's greatness through the eyes of immigrants. And we have on the line Nana from Ghana. Hey, Nana, how
hey,
are
Joe.
You?
How's it going?
Fantastic. So, you're the first immigrant we've had from Africa, so if I got to start there, I want to start with that right there. What are your thoughts? I know that, I don't know for sure, but I can assume you're, what you, I don't know what your feelings are, but I know you have some thoughts on. I always find it interesting as a black man from America to hear people talk about Africa and going back to Africa, how Africans are treating the black this, acting like it's a country. So I want to know, I want to start off by saying, what do you think about the people who say Africa like you're all the same?
Oh, gosh. Wow, you've hit on a topic that usually is a bit of a sore spot to those of us who are from the continent. Yeah, Africa is not monolithic, so I can only speak in large part from my experience as a Ghanaian. Even then, my experience is nuanced because there's so many different classes and ethnic groups that are in Ghana. In some degree, I can talk about West Africa, but by no means can I talk for the entirety of Africa. You have five different sub-regions within that continent alone. So usually that statement is just born. On a good day, I can excuse it as, well, this is the United States of America, which for all intents and purposes is a country made out of 50 smaller countries, but it's seen as just one country, so I can excuse it for that. But for the most part, it's just, yeah, you can afford learning more about other places and cultures enough to make statements that are more closer to the truth.
Without a doubt. I know people will love it because what I heard, I mean, because I read and I study a lot and I care about other cultures. And it's that. But even you, that's why I wanted to do this, because you learn a lot from people when you hear it firsthand. Tell everybody the awesome story about your uncle.
Oh, yeah. So my uncle is a surgeon in Johannesburg, South Africa. He probably moved from Ghana right around the time I was born, so back in the late 80s, early 90s. And whenever he comes to visit Ghana from South Africa, he's usually greeted with the response, oh, we'll have a good time in Africa, even though South Africa is like half Africa in its name and it's part of the continent.
I love that. If you want to get that, the man is going to visit his family in Ghana in Africa, and he's leaving South Africa in Africa, and if people say, have fun in Africa. Yeah,
yep.
You think we're
going to... I mean, if he was leaving Madagascar, I could see how they could make that argument work. But I'm pretty sure he doesn't get that from there.
Right, but see, that's the point that I'm trying to make here, is that America, even with its flaws, and I'm sure you can put out many that you've seen since you've been here, but it's not that. The key is that we're not, you know, perfect, but these type of things are human things, not American things. So the fact that those things happen, and in North Africa is a whole different thing altogether. So,
absolutely.
Right. So I think people need to understand that before they go off on, well, somebody did something to me that was racist in Chicago, therefore America sucks. Right?
Yeah. Yes. And I think that's a difficult one. I think the best of times when you hear arguments, people bashing on America who are Americans, It's similar to what you and John are talking about, right? It's coming from a place of seeking a more perfect union. Mm-hmm. And that's America at its most beautiful, right? Because it's a country that has continued to go back to its original ideals, some of which were flawed, but it's been able to go back to its original ideals and continue to ask the question, how can we be better? How are we aligning to these original ideals?
I would argue against our ideals were flawed. The people were flawed.
I mean, if the people are making the ideals, then if the people are flawed, then the ideals are flawed.
No, the people made a great idea and then didn't follow up to it. John?
Well, even when they made the idea, they weren't following up to it. So, I mean, you have a nation that's, and to its credit, I mean, I think it's interesting. The time I started appreciating the U.S. and its ideals the best was when I heard from a British theologian talking about how America is the greatest experiment and the world is learning from both its successes and its failures. And that helped me appreciate, it wasn't coming from an American, it was coming from someone, you know, a country that used to rule America for all intents and purposes, or the colonies, seeing America in a different light from, you know, where I probably stood at that point.
Well, I told you this goes fast. We only have a few more seconds. I know you wanted to point out one other thing. I think it was about violence or about guns or something you wanted to say.
Oh, yes. So it's been very interesting as someone coming from Ghana, being privy to the gun debates in America. And sometimes people make the argument about, well, the best way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. And you could argue for that. But I usually like to point out that fact that when I was growing up in Ghana, usually you would have a cat burglar reaching into your home, coming with no weapons. And then we started attacking them with guns, and so they started coming with guns. And then we started using bigger guns, and they came with even bigger guns. The argument, it doesn't always work.
That's true. Well, thanks for calling. Thanks for coming on. And we'll be back talking about America's greatness on Black and Right, AM 560 The Answer.
And now, more of Black and Right on AM 560. Here are your hosts, John Anthony and Charles Love.
Welcome back to Black and Right with John and Charles. Coming back with the Immigrant Zone, perfect for this episode about Americans' greatness. And John, we've had a doozy for the first hour. What have you been thinking about hearing these stories?
I think there's a common thread with everybody that we've spoken to thus far. The common thread is the how great America really is, and how I think each one of those people that we spoke to today feels like we need to continue to fight to make sure America stays great. And I think that's when you look at what the president, why he came up with that Make America Great Again. I can tie Trump to anything.
It's funny though. It's funny because the Trump supporters and the Trump haters can make everything about Trump.
That's right. I'm very skilled at that.
Okay.
But I think that's when Winthrop said it, together with, about the city being on a hill and the greatness of America and all eyes upon us. I think Trump gets that. And how great America really is. And I really don't think, and I think what's happening today is when you're having all these cultures, all of these ethnicities who are coming here to America and not assimilating, not taking on the culture of America, but bringing their culture and expecting their culture to be the top culture of America, I think that's why we're running into a lot of these problems, because you have this huge melting pot and it's boiling over.
Yeah.
I think that's what's happening when you look out and seeing what's happening in America. Right. Look, Trump is a lot of people trying to make it look like it's a racist. I'm never going to stop saying Trump.
wrong,
fake news, right? But that's really what's happening, because Trump really was the one to bring this whole immigration debate to the forefront to actually try to help change it, to try to fix what's wrong. And that's I was gonna pose that question to, what was his name, Nana?
Mm-hmm.
I was going to pose that question, but we just didn't have enough time to do it. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, we have to fix this immigration system. I mean, we're still working and operating on a decades-old immigration system. We've done pot shots. We've done little piecemeal fixes here. But it's going to take men and women who are willing to sacrifice and lose their seats to actually fix what's ailing our immigration system and process.
Well, I mean, I think the immigration system definitely needs reworking, but I think that's a whole show in itself. I want to talk about the culture, the way people act, immigrants, about Americans, this American greatness thing, and focus primarily on that, because you make a good point. You said people are coming here expecting, to make their culture dominant and things of that nature. And I think Dennis Prager says a good thing. He always talks about people flee things. I'm going to leave that country because this was bad, and then they go somewhere else and they want what they left, which doesn't make sense. And I think it's good that we had Nana last, because Nana made a really good point too, because he talked about appreciating America's greatness, but he got the most appreciation from it in listening to a contextual description of it. And I think that goes to my argument. My argument is what do we lead the hour with me saying,
yeah,
people think greatness is perfect. So we're arguing, those of us who think this country is great, are arguing for greatness, and they're saying, well, it's not, because that guy wasn't perfect. But they're arguing two separate things.
But I do think it makes sense, and I think that's the argument of America. These people realize they can come to America and do what they're doing, not assimilating, freely, without any, some army, some police coming after them. I think that's why it makes
sense. Moving them to a certain
section. That's why it makes sense. And look, I want any and everybody to come to America. America is great because of immigrants. Legally, though.
There you go. Well, this has been fun. We're not done. The fun is going to continue. We have a few more people coming up. We have the great Jason Hill, author of the book We Have Overcome, talking about immigration and assimilation. You're listening to Black and Right on AM 560, The Answer.
Prepare to have your mind opened. The lies of the mainstream media are about to be exposed. And the hypocrisy of the left is about to be revealed. You've tuned into Black and Right. This is a revolution in how you think about politics, race, and culture. And leading that revolution are your hosts, Charles Love and John Anthony.
Welcome back to Black and Right with John and Charles. Is this just me, John? Is the second hour intro music always really, really fast?
Really, really fast. I think it was on some, like, speed or something.
Yeah, that is odd. Well, as you know, in this hour, like the first hour, we're going to talk about America's greatness through the eyes and ears and experiences of immigrants. And John was talking about briefly at the end of the hour about what he got from the callers and guests we had in the first hour.
Yeah.
So what did you talked about assimilation, and you talked about Nana, and you talked about Korea, and what was the other we talked? We had Soviet Union, right?
Yeah. The Soviet Union.
Yeah.
What part of this? Oh, the Reigns.
Yes.
His music sounds pretty good too.
Yeah, we
how did you find him? How'd you find him?
I met him through Julie, actually.
Oh,
right, it's like an immigrant chain. All the immigrants know each other, I guess. It's a thing.
Uh-oh. Gotta be careful with the immigrant chain thing going on.
So, so now we're going to continue the thing, and we are...
But Charles, here's a question. Why do you think so many Americans don't believe America's great, or they don't believe in the exceptionalism of America? What? I mean, who started it? Where did this stem from?
I think that a lot of it is where it started, I don't know. I think that people make the mistake of thinking because they're upset about something. Okay, it's like, I'll give you one. I was talking about an article that I read before and reading clips from it, and I had another one that I had. I'm trying to see if I can find it. It was about a conversation that I had with immigrants at a barbershop, right? Uh-huh. And it started out, two Palestinians, a Mexican, a Syrian, and a black man are sitting at a barbershop.
Sounds like a joke.
It sounds like the beginning of a joke, but it describes a recent encounter I had. So I go on to say, one of the guys says, Trump's a racist and when was America great? And it goes back and forth into that. So it was a young Palestinian guy, and he used as an example saying that he was at the airport and he was detained for several hours and he felt that it was because he was a Muslim. And I said that what he fails to understand that he's calling the country racist because he was held at the airport. Now, it could have been racism. It could have been another thing. But let's assume it is racism. I'm saying, but the problem where he doesn't understand is that he's making that act of racism from that person the country. So the country's
correct.
Racist because that guy's like, no, the country is the government. That guy is racist.
Correct.
And unfortunately, the other guy there was also Palestinian, but he was older. He's like, that's interesting you say this country is racist against Palestinians because you were detained for 8 hours. Because I've been here for 30 years, and I've been going back and forth from Lebanon here, and I've never been stopped.
But do you think it also...
What they don't understand is situational.
Do you think it also has something to do with our educational system? You think how they're teaching and to your point, to the culture?
Without a doubt.
You look at what happened yesterday with all these schools, all these school age kids going around doing a climate change thing. I mean, I think it comes from there. I'm a late bloomer as far as going to a university. And I remember, going to and some of the educational stuff that I had to do, some of the papers I had to write. I'm like, wait a minute, they want me to talk about how much I hate America. I don't hate America. I love this country.
Yeah, that is true. Education obviously plays a huge part. I mean, people don't know. You got these impressionable minds, and people are teaching them and telling them. And the people who are teaching are from a generation that were raised, as we slowly move to the left. And so they're angry, so they're instilling all these views on those students. You know what? Before we go to our next guest, maybe we should see what Verlon has to say.
Here we go.
Verlon, are you still there?
Uh-oh.
What's up, brothers? Listen.
Listen.
John, you stole some of my thunder, but not all of it. Okay. You are exactly right. Assimilation is what's assimilation, not assimilating, is what's killing this country. See, I'm going to break down a little scientific knowledge that you might not be aware of right now. Now, the left says assimilating under the white culture is like oppressing the people. They're starting not to use multiculturalism anymore because that means separate but equal. They're catching on to it. So now they got this new thing called the solid bowl. Uh-huh. That means every culture is supposed to learn from each other. See, I work in healthcare, so we test like every month and I have to learn these things. But what I want to say is, you mean to tell me two black men got to belittle a black woman and got away from her and got away with it?
Oh, that's a good point.
I got a sneaky suspicion because she's a conservative and they don't count, right?
Correct.
Okay.
That's a good
now,
point.
What I want to say is, listen, black people, I'm black, so I got to break down our problem, right?
You black?
With black people, we think the country owes us, okay? That's the reason why we bought into the Bernie Sanders idea of what's good for us. Like, in the Democrat platform, whenever I get a chance to speak, I'm going to break down the Democrat platform. One thing that the Democrats champion is an economic renaissance.
Oh, boy.
Now, does either one of you know what that means?
But you're going to break it down to us, I'm sure.
Okay, let me break it down to you. Our economic renaissance means the top-down takeover of business, healthcare, education, all of the issues that matter. Like in China, they got to have 51% of your business. The government owns your business. If they take over healthcare, they take over education, and teach your kids the way they want them to learn, what do you have? You have oppression. You have government telling you exactly what to do with your life. You don't own your life anymore. And black people have bought into that. That is socialism at the highest.
Hey, Verlon, we're going to have to meet for coffee. We're going to have to meet for some coffee.
Well, you all are definitely going to get to talk. Thanks, Verlon, for the call. Now, we were waiting to get our guest online. That's when we went to Verlon. We knew he could fill some time. Next guest is Jason Hill. He's the professor of philosophy at DePaul University and author of several books. His most recent is We Have Overcome, An Immigrant's Letter to the American People. He's also the president and CEO of the Institute of Immigration Assimilation. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I wanted to have you on. I don't know how much you've heard about what we've been saying and the other people to call, because you literally wrote the book on the greatness of America and how people take it for granted, and I wanted you to talk about that a bit. Now, of course, if you want to go into a bit of your experience in Jamaica, because I know you came basically as an adult, so you have your experiences there, but talk about what ties these stories together of these immigrants and coming here and what they experience when they get here.
Well, I think one of the things that ties us all together is that we didn't really experience the worst of America. That is, you know, America is a very complicated country. And we all came here with aspirational identities. We all came here not experiencing the worst aspects of America. We didn't sit in the back of a bus. We didn't experience the nefarious aspects of racism. We came here knowing a dream in our hearts that we had. We came here wanting to write our narratives, and we came here wanting to plant our stories onto the American landscape. And so we came here not being afraid of white people. We came here not being scared of any obstacles that we were told we would face in America. We came here with a kind of confidence, knowing that with grit, tenacity, perseverance, and hard work, there wasn't anything that we couldn't overcome. And we believed in the concept of the American dream, unlike Ta-Nehisi Coates, who thought that the American dream was inimical to the aspirational identities of black people. We believe in the American dream.
Well, Jason, I would say that, that while that is true, there's two sides to it, right? So you all came without having that baggage of us blacks, the Ados, as they're calling them today, who were here before. But you also, in a lot of situations, your career, the guy who left the Soviet Union, had experiences that were so negative that when they come here, you know, there's nothing but hope. So we kind of lose out on that aspect of it as well, right?
On hope?
No, that I'm saying that there's a higher level of hope and expectations and a positive forward thinking of that immigrant coming from those areas where there were dictators and things of that nature than the person who was here, who even they had to, though they had to deal with discrimination, they were born to a level of freedom that other countries don't see.
I think that's right, and I think those distinctions have to be made. That's why I said, you know, we didn't really sit in the back of a bus. We didn't have that sort of nefarious experiences that ethnic minorities in this country had, and I think those distinctions have to be made. And I think one of the things that really upsets me is that when I hear, for example, Caribbean blacks trying to disparage the experiences of black Americans or African Americans or Native Americans and say we're not like those people.
I think we have to say,
or Africans, you know, Nigerians or West Africans. I said, look, you know, you have to have some sort of compassion without being patronizing. You have to say, you have to realize that psychologically, we as immigrants came here without those kinds of, we came here with a set of, a different kind of cultural baggage. We came here with a kind of confidence. We came here not as race people, but we came here as cultural people with a kind of confidence that equipped us to deal with white people and to deal with white racism in a completely different way.
We got the music here because we got you. Like, can you hold over to the next segment?
Sure.
All right, we'll be back with Jason Hill on Black and Right, AM 560, The Answer.
We now return to Black and Right on AM 560. Here are Charles Love and John Anthony.
Welcome back to Black and Right on AM 560, The Answer. We held Jason Hill, author of We Have Overcome, over from the break. Just a couple more minutes with you there, Jason. Thanks for staying. I wanted to talk about, you know, you talk about assimilation, why that is key and how that plays into how well American dream or the views of America will be perpetuated in someone who's an immigrant.
Right. Well, I think that we are gravely in danger of becoming what Europe has become, which is a parallel society where, you know, we need to have a society where foreigners don't necessarily give up their cultural habits, but they assimilate to a set of political ideals and norms and mores that are constitutive of who and what America is. That is, you can speak your language privately if you want. You can cook your foods, but your public identity coalesces around the core features of American, of what I call Americanism.
Wow.
And what we have coming out of America is where foreigners come here, especially Muslims, who are in danger of seeing Islamization of America, where we're going to see the application of Sharia law, where a lot of foreigners come here and want to supplant their ethnic identities onto America and expect America and expect American identity to subordinate itself to their mores and norms and have their mores and their norms supersede American identity. And that is very dangerous because America stands for something.
Yes.
We stand for liberty, freedom of conscience,
yes,
freedom of separation of state and church. And what we're seeing is a parallel society taking place in this country where immigrants think that the countries that they have left, they want to transport the mores and norms
to America.
After all, to America. Why would you have left your country there?
That's what we just spoke about. Jason, tell us a little bit about your experience with the American immigration system. How easy was the green card, the visa system? What needs to be changed about it?
Well, I came here in 1985 at the age of 20. I'm 54 under Reagan. I came here legally. My grandmother was a citizen because she was vetted. Her brother was married to an American for 40 years, so he sponsored her. She sponsored my mother. My mother sponsored my brother and I. We were vetted very, very thoroughly. My grandmother had to have an affidavit, a bank account of over $40,000. My mother had to secure employment before she could come to this country to show that she was not a parasite on the state. We were vetted very, very thoroughly. We came here with green cards under President Reagan, and I came here with $100 in my pocket. I worked at the four jobs to put myself through school as an undergraduate before I won a scholarship to do a PhD. It was a terrible struggle, but I never gave up. I graduated magna cum laude. What has to be changed is that we cannot just have open borders where we allow immigrants into this country unvetted. It is ridiculous what is going on, where we think that anyone has a right to come in. Immigration is a privilege, it is not a right. Mm-hmm. It is a privilege. And we have to have a vetting process. It's tragic that there are good people who want to come into this country, but not everyone can be let in. Some are going to unfortunately be disqualified for a myriad of reasons. But we've got to have a proper vetting process, and we've got to change the narrative that immigration is a right. It's not a right, it's a privilege.
Right.
Every country has the right to secure its borders and to develop criteria for who gets let in and who is not permitted.
Well, thank you, Jason. That's a great place to leave it, because we definitely want to talk more about that. We have some others. I appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on and giving us some context. And have a great day.
Thank you.
That was a great answer.
It was. You know, the reason I liked it so much was because it left it right there. So everybody can't get in because we can't take 7 billion people in here. And
who says so? Who says we can't?
Some people, common sense says we can't. And then it's important because, you know, you asked him about how his story when he came here. He talked about the immigration piece, the logistical.
Did you hear that vetting part?
No, but you talked about all that. That's great. But what I picked up from that was the whole multiple jobs, only $100, doing all the work mm-hmm. thing. Well, here's the thing that everybody thinks that you're knocking black people. Black people, talking to them specifically, and those who have different thoughts about black people, that used to be black Americans. Right? That's important to say. We used to have that same work ethic. We used to work that hard. We used to talk about how you would get off a job and go to another job. So that's not, you know, something that we act like this is something because we've had generations of it, unfortunately. We act like if you go back in our DNA that's what the immigrants do and that's what the white man do, but the black man's lazy and all that kind of stuff. That's craziness. No, that used to be us. So we have to answer the question as to what happened there. So
okay, I'm going to push back a little bit on you. I don't think black America is that far away from that. I still do believe that black America still has that work ethic. I still think they have that motor where they want to be able to come to America, give back to America. I mean, there are so many people. I mean, look here in Illinois. Look here in Illinois. Almost every form of government has a black person.
What they gonna do with working hard?
What I'm saying, because black people do work hard. When I hear people say black people don't work hard, that's not true.
Is that what I said?
No, it's basically what you alluded to.
No, really?
Yeah, that's what you alluded to.
I think I just said the opposite of that.
You
said
we used to have that work ethic.
Oh, yeah, you don't get it.
But we never lost that work ethic. Okay. There are some people that may not have it, yeah, but we haven't lost it as a whole, as a race. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, so now let's quickly go to Andre, who's from Poland, to hear the Polish experience. Should I try it?
Say his name. Go ahead.
This is Andre Oryskiewicz. How'd I do?
Hey, good morning, Charles and John.
Hey, good afternoon. Aren't you in the same time zone I'm in? Or are you in Poland?
What was that last part of that day?
Well,
how are you? So,
fantastic. Great show, guys.
Well,
John,
thank you.
And Charles.
Thank now, you have an
You're
interesting story because you came here as an adult. You weren't fleeing anything, so, you know, you came here, and so tell us a bit about your experiences both in Poland and when you first arrived here in America.
Sure. I came here when I was 23 years old, and I followed love. However, I grew up in Poland during the Solidarity time, so I So I'm kind of a rebellious spirit, and I was 16 when the martial law was enacted, and then took another 8 years until finally the Solidarity Movement, the United States with Ronald Reagan,
right,
and a Republican Party, and a Catholic Church with Pope John II and the independent unions made it happen that socialism or the communism fail around the world and in Europe.
Right, it's perfect because you were there during that time, so you understand that. And
exactly.
I think that what's unique is, what I want to talk to you about, the reason I wanted to have someone from Poland on, is what I find is this unique turn. So, America, you live during the crust of the communism in Europe and that battle, and you came here to this wonderful free country. And now you're watching people scream socialist every day, and now Poland is the most conservative country in Europe now. I mean, if I had
Charles,
to flee,
you're right. Yes.
If the Bernie Sanders and the leftists win this, and I got to move here, the place I got to go is Poland. So isn't it weird? Don't you, as a Pole, sit back and think, wow, that's weird. Where I came from, it's got to be more startling for you watching us slowly, even though some of us are fighting, turn into what you fled.
It is exactly right. I am amazed. I witnessed fall of communism or the socialism or Marxism, which is the same thing. And
was it
and
democratic?
Now,
was it democratic socialism?
Well, yes. And here I am, 30 years later, and I see the Marxism is being resurrected out of all countries, the United States of America, the greatest nation on God's green earth.
Can you say that again? Can you say that? Hey, can you say that last part one more time for me? It's the America is the what?
United States of America is the greatest nation on God's green earth.
Wow. Amen. Andre, thank you. You were short but powerful. You gave the people some really interesting, thought-provoking comments. Capitalism is greater than communism. You're listening to Black and Right on AM 560, The Answer.
Back to Black and Right with John Anthony and Charles Love on AM 560, The Answer.
Welcome back to Black and Right with John and Charles. It's the heart making me talk over Sweet Madam Blue, Love Stick. But we're back, and we have an interesting caller I want to go to. Karam Habib, welcome to Black and Right.
Hey, thank you, guys. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Doing well.
I hope I didn't butcher it. This is an interesting show. My producer is like, man, you're killing me in here. I make it a point to pronounce all the callers' names properly, but you got all these darn immigrants calling up in here. But
sorry, Hoff Daddy.
But you have a unique take. I don't know how much of the other stuff you've heard, but we've been listening to experiences from people from different countries, and they all have a similar tie-in, but there's slightly different nuances that bring something different to the conversation. You are a Pakistani Muslim, so it's wonderful to hear what both a Muslim would say about America and his experiences here, which would obviously would be different from some of the others. So tell us what your experiences has been like since you've been in America.
Got the popcorn.
Well, no. Well, share some popcorn with me too, by the way. Well, my experience, first of all, I came in 2002, so right after 1 year of 9/11. Mm-hmm. And I think I was like a couple of first ones from Pakistan who got the visa to come here as a student.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was going there, applying for the whole process, everyone was saying, hey, they're rejecting it. Don't even go. Don't even bother. But I said, hey, I have nothing else to do. I really want to try. And if it goes through, sure. If not, then, yeah, you know, I'll be with other people. But anyway, fast forward, I'm here. First couple of years as any student, international student, it was, like, kind of interesting trying to learn the culture, trying to, you know, learn the slangs, trying to see how things work over here.
But what made you want to come initially, though? So when you said, I know people were like, oh, they're not going to let you go, especially with the circumstances at the time. But what made you say, hey, I think I want to go and do some schooling there? What piqued your interest?
So I had a really good family over there. Like, you know, I could have just stayed there and do nothing. But I really wanted to
prove myself. That's a description.
I'm bored.
I'm booking a flight to Pakistan right now. I could stay there and do nothing. But go
exactly.
on.
Exactly. But, yeah, like, I wanted to prove myself. I'm like, hey, I want to go outside. I want to do something. I want to see the world. And I
but
really want to see
Japan.
Like
you didn't pick Japan. You didn't pick Iran. You didn't pick France. Why here?
So I did, actually. I applied USA, London, Canada, and Australia.
Well, wow, after 9/11, and you got in here. Look at that.
Exactly. So USA was top number one priority, and the reason was I'm a civil engineer. And I'm like, okay, I want to do my master's, where I can get a master's, and if I come back to Pakistan, and if I have to do a work or job or anything, who will pay the best? Who was, you know, the best bucks or the, you know, whatever, for my education. In the end, of course, USA was number one. Canada was number two for educational-wise. And even USA, too, like there were like 3-4 different universities I applied. I actually went to IIT right on South Side. I stayed there for 14 years. Loved that area, Bridgeport and stuff. And basically, that was my number one. I had also applied in Colorado State University. I got my I-20 from there. So then once I start getting acceptance from different universities in USA, then I'm like, you know what, let me start focusing over there. So then I start focused over there, and yeah, I'm here.
So is it, it's Karam. Which one is it?
Perfect.
Oh, I said it perfect. Well,
yes, you are fine. Karam is good. So, and a lot of people butcher my name.
That's fine. I apologize if I do. But
No.
What I want to get to is, I mean, when you're here in America now, how are your family dealing with you being American? And the topic of the show today is America greatness. Do you believe, how do you feel about America being called the greatest country in the nation?
It is the greatest country in this nation, in this world. I can tell you, I mean, nothing against anyone, but you never saw, like, none of you guys have gone outside, lived in any country, have stayed there and seen how things work. I mean, come on, immigrant who is not a good, like, English is not my first native language, who's here as a student and being here for 10, 15 years, and the things I have done, can't complain. Trust me. It will take me 25 years in my country to achieve what I have done over here.
Amen.
Without any help, without anything. And same goes for anyone. Like, you come here, it's land of your dream. Like, you can dream for something, and tomorrow the only reason you won't achieve it because you are lazy or you are thinking something else.
Well, I want to leave it this. I know it's not perfect, and you probably experienced some bad things because that happens everywhere. But tell me, I assume that when that happens, you separate what happens from a person to the country. But as a Muslim, like you said, you came here after 9/11, you got in, you made it through the process. But obviously, you've experienced some people, some comments, some looks, some things about people saying things about Muslims. How do you take those kind of situations?
Well, I think I got lucky. I don't know what was written on my face. I never got called out. Nobody ever asked me anything.
Wow.
Single
person.
Not at all. Like, I would just say a couple of times people would just ask me, hey, so what religion are you? Okay. So what do you think when people say Muslims are bad? I'm like, well, they are wrong. They might not have seen a lot of Muslims. Oh, yeah, that's true. And that's it. Like, I never got in a conversation,
Thanks.
Heated conversation.
That is a great way to leave the segment. Thank you, Karam. When we come back, we'll have a cautionary tale from Wharton. This is Charles and John, Black and Right, AM 560, The Answer.
This is Black and Right on AM 560 with Charles Love and John Anthony.
Thank you too. Welcome back to Black and Right, AM 560, The Answer with John and Charles.
Hey Charles, I'm going to question your blackness with this selection of music.
They're immigrant songs. You got to go look up the lyrics. They're all refugee, green card. You know, come on.
If
it's
you
a
say
theme.
So.
It's
okay,
a
if
theme.
You say so.
So, as we're talking America's greatness through the experiences of immigrants, we have Wharton on the line. Wharton is Brazilian. He's an attorney who specialized in religious law. He has a master's degree in theology and ethics, and he is here doing a religious pastoral internship at the Addison Street Community College. Wharton, welcome to Black and Right.
Wow.
Hey, thank you, Charles, and thank you, John, for having me in your show. I've been appreciating to listen to all the radio show right now. It's awesome.
Right. You're going to have to speak. So we're going to make a deal. I know I talk fast. I'm going to talk slower. You're going to have to speak up a little bit. It's a little low.
Oh, I know what happened. The microphone here was
Oh, you're good now.
Sorry.
So, you know, we talked about...
Just some correction. Oh. My pastoral residency is at Addison Street Community Church. College.
Oh, yeah. I said college. Oh, yeah. At church. At the church. You know,
Nation.
I attend. I know.
Nation Church.
Right.
Yeah.
Nation Church.
But I was saying thank you for having me in your show. It's I appreciate listening to all the immigrants. It's been awesome so far. Thank you and congratulations for the show.
Well, thank you. So we want to do two quick segments as time goes by really fast. I want to talk first about, from a political economic standpoint, about Brazil, you know, with, like I mentioned with some of the other callers, about this big push for socialism here in America. And you had somewhat of an experience there. I know you've... just elected someone from the Conservative Party. You had a period of kind of like left-leaning people for a while, and before that it was more moderate. So talk about the transition and how that affected the economy there.
Well, what is happening in Brazil right now, we have a new government which is conservative and that is trying to be liberal economically-wise. We actually, after the new constitution in 1988, all the time has been governed and ruled by socialist or social democratic parties, which are pretty much the same about it. But anyway, after 20 or almost 30 years of a very progressive and leftist government, Brazil's trying to recover from the consequences. That's what's current.
So what would you say to the Americans you see and hear, if you could speak to you know, these people who are pushing for more government controls, free everything and that kind of thing, not even from a political thing because you're not a citizen here, but what would you do as a cautionary tale? What would you tell them some of the pitfalls that they may run into if we move down that path?
Well, first of all, most of the people who really are for socialism or more government control, actually they have no idea what they're talking about. Unfortunately, that's a reality. They think of a utopia that's coming with it. They think of a perfect world that is going to be possible if government controls every area of our life. But the opposite is exactly what happens. If you see what's happening right now in Venezuela, that's a consequence of government control to the extreme. And Brazil was going the same way. Actually, there was a president impeached a couple years ago. And they were very going. They're going very fast, the same direction as Venezuela is going. And we started feeling that in Brazil. And then the whole population went on the streets, the biggest street movement that ever happened in the country. And that was enough to pressure the Congress to impeach the ex-president Dilma.
Wharton, I got a question for you. Well, how do you feel about the fake news and all about how the coverage of the Amazon is being done throughout the world?
Oh, yeah. That's well, you know how that happened. End of August, French President Macron, he tweeted exactly this: "Our house is burning, literally. The Amazon, the rainforest, the lungs which produces 90% of our planet's oxygen is on fire. International fire." I mean, that's the most condensed fake news that you're going to find in the internet this year. Because first of all, Brazil is not his house. That's fake, all right? Maybe what's burning is his house, yeah? France, a lot of churches are burning. He wasn't able to come Cathedral, the only fire that was happening in the Notre Dame Cathedral, right? So, yeah, his house is on fire, not Brazil. The Amazon is not the length of the world. Actually, it produces maybe 6 to 9% of the oxygen, which is which consumes itself because it's a closed ecosystem. Yeah.
But what about the photo that Macron posted?
What is it again?
The photo that he posted.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was the funny part about that. Because I actually posted a picture from 1989, 30 years ago. And the guy who took that picture died in 2003. And he posted that picture as it was, like a picture that was going on right now in Amazon. So that became a joke. That became a joke around the world. I even posted on my Facebook.
Well, thank you, Warden. Now, hopefully people will hear this and understand the importance of the free market capitalism and the freedom that they have in America and won't let that go. You are listening to Black and White on AM 560, The Answer, with John and Charles.
This is Black and Right on AM 560 with Charles Love and John Anthony.
Welcome back to Black and Right on AM 560, The Answer, with John and Charles. Final segment. A while back we said, hey, we were 1 hour. We said we need two, so now we need like two or three more.
Probably.
So we've been talking about America's greatness through the eyes of immigrants. And John's going to close out the show, but briefly I want to mention a couple points from an article I got. It says from the Wall Street Journal that says why Bernie Sanders is wrong about Sweden. And it's a Swedish-born economist who talks about, yeah, Sweden has a significant welfare state, but it's underpinned by ruthless capitalism, he calls it. He said, technically it's not true to call it a socialist country because we weren't socialists. We experimented in it from the 60s and 70s, which doubled the size of the government, and now they backed off of it. So some of the quotes from the article is, it resulted in less work, people preferring to stay at home and paint the house rather than hiring someone to do it, general lack of getting that kind of education that matters. It led to entrepreneurs leaving Sweden, right? That's what he said the experiment of socialism led to.
Wow.
But he said at the same time, the government came in and they cut capital gains, corporate taxes, and cut the top marginal income tax. So while we were saying they were socialists, they weren't really socialists in the way that the Bernie's talking about it. He said they've been more deregulated. The product markets are much fiercer, have much fiercer competition and much more free trade. All of the companies know that they have to be world champs or they will be destroyed. To healthcare, he also says that it's kind of a flat tax. It's more reasonable than national, and all that is underpinned by private healthcare, whereas, you know, American Democrats aspire to abolish private insurance. He said one of the biggest hospitals in Stockholm was privatized, and you can go to private providers. And the first line of healthcare defense in their country is a private clinic. So I want you to know when Bernie's referencing, I want to be more like Denmark. Because, you know, they used to say Cuba and Venezuela and everywhere else until they crashed. And then they just keep moving the countries around. And now they're on Sweden, and he wanted to point out that they weren't really.
Let me guess, he didn't get called out on his own.
Of course not.
Okay.
What do you got?
You know, Charles, what I want to do after each show is do what I call the final thoughts about, you know, just to basically sum up what I think the show was about today.
Deep thoughts.
That's right. I need the music, the real slow music. Come on, let's go. Let's go, Hop Daddy.
I'm just going to stand over here and wave my American flag.
America still stands as the beacon for a world that I believe is languishing in darkness. I believe that so many people are beginning to see that city on the hill that Reagan spoke so eloquently of. This simple idea of America and its greatness has led the people of Hong Kong to cry out for freedom. The people of Iran had this same cry for help so many years ago. I want as many people as possible to come to this great nation and thrive. To maintain our status as a nation, people must abide by the laws that have been put in place. This is why American greatness has lasted so long. Our entire immigration system needs significant reform. However, it will take the men and women that you and I have elected to do the right thing, even if it means risking their seats of power. America continues to be great because of the American people. America will be even greater when our elected officials stop worrying about the next election and do the right thing. Today, we have a president who is willing to do just that in the form of President Donald J. Trump. These are my final thoughts.
Really?
Come on, Charles.
I'm waving a flag. You're like America's just shining beacon on the hill.
Red, red, glass, double funding in there. Gay, pro, fruit, and night. And a flag was still there. Oh, say, does that sprinkle? And I just wait.
I can't sing. Join us for another 2 hour show on Black and Right on AM 560. We'll see you next week.